Welcome to Pick Up and Deliver, the podcast where I pick up an audio recorder when I get off the train and deliver a show to you while I walk home. I'm Brendan Riley. Well, what a lovely day it is. It's a Monday. The sun is out. The sky is blue. There's those white puffy clouds, cumulus clouds with the cotton look to them. It's a beautiful day here in Chicago, and I'm happy to be walking with you. I hope that your day is going nice. It's a little tiring today. It's the it's March 12th, first day after the spring equinox when the clocks are moved forward. So it messes with my sleep schedule a little bit. I don't know if it messes with yours, but I hope you're staying healthy and awake. So I wanted to talk today a little bit about a game I played this weekend some and some of the observations I had from it. I don't know if I will make this a regular thing, but I probably will. I guess it doesn't need to be given a formal name of a segment. This show isn't really organized that way anyhow. So this weekend, my in-laws visited, and as is often the case when they are in town, we played Harry Potter Hogwarts Battle. We are playing a four-player game of it, my wife, my daughter, and I, and my mother-in-law, and having a pretty good time. However, it's getting really hard. We are on book four. If you don't know the game, it's a deck builder game, not too dissimilar from something like Legendary, the Marvel deck building game. And it is, it comes in books. So when you first play the game, book one, it's a very, very simple deck builder, very easy to win. And then with each successive book, after you've won the first book, you're supposed to open a box labeled book two, and you get new cards and new villains and maybe a new rule. And then once you win that, you play book three and then book four. So we're on book four. So this Friday last was our third game of book four. And it was the third time that we just got clobbered. I mean wrecked. The way the Harry Potter deck builder game goes, your goal is to get through, to defeat all of the villains before the villains gain control of all the locations. There are three locations, and as the game goes along, those locations get stronger. I won't say too much in case you haven't played it and I want to give away things, but your goal is to get control of these locations, or to keep control of the locations to minimize how fast the bad guys gain control while you're defeating them. If you defeat all the villains in the villain deck, then you win the game and you go on to the next book. Well, we've played the book four game three times now with four players, and we got just clobbered every time. We did not get halfway through the deck this time. So I spent some time reading about how to adjust the game or what's going on that I need to consider, and I found a variety of different solutions some people offered, but I think there are a number of things that I found in the conversations about strategy and discussion of the game that were really interesting and I think make for interesting play. So I wanted to talk about the things I've learned from the Harry Potter Hogwarts Battle game. The first is that, just generally, different people get different things out of a cooperative game. Now, Harry Potter, like Legendary, is a cooperative game. You play four of the four main characters from the Harry Potter books or movies, that being Harry, Hermione, Ron, and Neville, and you're trying to defeat the various dark forces. Lord Voldemort, of course, but also various less exciting minions like Crabbe and Goyle, Draco and Lucius Malfoy, Peter Pettigrew, etc., etc. Game four has been really hard. We played it three times, we lost three times, didn't really feel like we were making any progress. Now, last time that I've had a co-op be this hard and this frustrating was Ghost Stories. I bought Ghost Stories a couple years ago now, and we played it three or four times, and we just got clobbered every time. We would almost always get about halfway through to two-thirds of the way through the ghost deck before we would lose. And while sometimes it felt like we got a little further than we did other times, we never did well, and we never won, and it didn't really feel like we were getting better. And so I did a little bit of reading. I didn't want to spoil it for myself, because I feel like Ghost Stories, like many co-ops, is a puzzle. And if you read entirely how to do it, how to do well, then you've sort of ruined the puzzle, because you haven't solved it. At the same time, if you're not having fun, what's the point? So getting a little bit of a hint goes a long way. With Ghost Stories, the issue for me was learning that you really shouldn't be rolling the dice. Or you do roll the dice to try to save the colorful tokens, but if you're rolling the dice because you depend on getting the right roll, you're going to lose. You should be developing your characters in such a way that you don't have to rely on the dice. So that was one bit of a clue, along with a couple of rules clarifications that helped, because I was playing things wrong, that helped me enjoy Ghost Stories quite a bit more. And actually, playing one player, I can win on easy pretty regularly. I've won on normal a couple times. So part of me, and I will say my daughter is the same way, was really inclined to just keep playing the Harry Potter game the way we were, or to look up one or two clues, but really just focus on playing better. But my wife was very frustrated, and as was my mother-in-law, and they said they didn't probably want to play again, or they would really hesitate to play again, or maybe one more game and that would be it if we didn't start doing better, because it was too frustrating. So I started reading online, and I discovered a few things about the game, other than the fact that some people really like hard co-ops and other people don't. And people who really like hard co-ops are not going to enjoy something like Ghost Stories or maybe even Harry Potter, although Harry Potter is very easy early on and then gets very difficult depending how you play it. But it's important if you're playing games with people to know what kind of game they like. Do they like a hard co-op? Can they have fun doing that? Will they find pleasure in gaining skill by playing the game over and over again, or will they find that frustrating? In my family, we found it frustrating. I think one of the things that made the game feel so frustrating is that it felt like we didn't have a lot of choices to make. That usually there was one card or two cards in the market that we could buy. Sometimes there were none. And that was very frustrating because it doesn't feel like you have a lot of choice. And one of the things you're supposed to do in the game is buy things. The other part is that in a four-player game, the enemy attacks are just brutal. They're really, really strong. And the reason for that is just simple math. That in the Harry Potter game, you have 10 hit points and you regularly take damage from the villains. But you take two different kinds of damage. You take damage from the main villain directly if it's your turn. Active player loses one heart or something. But then a lot of the cards will also do damage to other players as well. All players lose a heart. Now in a two-player game, that means as a group, you've lost two hearts. And as a group, you need to heal two hearts in order to keep even Steven. In a four-player game, by contrast, you've lost four hearts, and your group would need to heal four hearts as well. Now, I can hear you saying, but Brendan, you have four players, so you have more hearts. The thing is, the enemies go every turn, regardless of how many players you have. So the cumulative effect of the enemies going every turn is that each individual player has to survive three rounds where they're not doing anything before they get to their turn when they do something. In fact, they have to survive the beginning of the round. The enemies always go first. So you really have to survive four rounds before you can do something. And it can just be really brutal. So that's one of the things that makes the four-player game so much harder than the three-player game. But I guess because of that, it feels like there's not a lot of meaningful choices to make sometimes in the game. In part because if you just draw the wrong villain to begin with, your group starts off so back-footed that it's really hard to win. And since we haven't won at all yet, I feel like we need a little boost. So there's two things about the way that Harry Potter works as a game that it's important to notice. The first of these is that you never lose any cards out of your deck. Now, most deck building games either directly do something to remove cards from your deck, or they allow you to do something to remove cards from their deck. Sometimes you'll have a card that lets you remove cards from your deck. Sometimes there'll be actions you can take that remove cards from your deck. Removing cards from your deck is really important because, as in most deck builders, you get 5 cards at the beginning of your turn, or maybe 6. In Harry Potter, it's 5. And those 5 cards, you're going to draw 5 new cards each turn. So if you have the original 10 cards you started with, and then you start buying new cards, some turns, 2 turns worth, you're going to draw just the cards you started with. Now you shuffle up your deck so you know what you're getting, or you don't know what you're getting, and they should be mixed in with other cards. But the long and short of it is that you're going to continue drawing these relatively weak cards throughout the game at a time when you want to be getting more powerful cards. So from the traditional approach to a deck building game, that's really frustrating because there's no way to get those cards out of your hand. The result of that for us was that we were playing badly. We were building these decks, buying cards each round when we could afford them, and building up a deck that was bloated. And that bloat ended up being very detrimental, that there would be turns where you're just drawing a handful of money, or there'd be a hand where you're drawing other kinds of cards that just aren't as effective. So one of the pieces of advice that we encountered online that was really helpful was that you should only buy cards that are really gonna help your game plan. Now, most deck building games, as you play, you build an approach, you build a game plan, you acquire certain kinds of cards and you get your character to do certain kinds of things. But in Harry Potter, you do have a game plan that you want to build, but it's really easy to get a variety of cards. And those cards actually will dilute the effectiveness of your character. What you want to do is get it so that your character is getting their bonus trigger as often as possible. Each character has a specialty that they get to do occasionally, and so the more often that you can get that to trigger, the better. And since your deck is gonna never get smaller, you need to only buy cards that directly help that particular motive. It's a difference, it's a big difference from a lot of deck building games where you want your characters to be able to do a little bit of everything. In Harry Potter, they really need to rely on one another. You pick somebody who's gonna be the healer and they have most of their cards do healing actions. Probably Neville, because when he heals people, they gain extra hearts. So, from one perspective, it's a little less fun because you don't have a lot of choices if you want to play well. From the other hand, it is fun because you learn to solve the puzzle in an interesting way. Which, like I said, you gain skill as you go along. So my daughter and I played 2 players, which, as I already said, the math on a 2-player game is much more reasonable. But then we also played to the strength of really focusing on getting cards that only help what we're trying to do, and avoiding getting cards that don't. The other thing that I found in exploring how Harry Potter works, is that randomness can really be a rough start for the game. Because the villains are all mixed in evenly, by the time you get to deck 4, there's some villains who are crazy easy, and others that are really, really strong. So part of the trick is to make sure that if you get a villain that's really strong at the beginning of the game, that's going to be a very hard game. So one of the things we have decided to do is adopting a house rule where if we draw a villain over a certain strength for the beginning of the game, we shuffle him back in and draw somebody else. Just to make sure that the beginning of the game doesn't kick us too hard in the teeth. And it worked a little bit. The first game that we played as a 2-player, we won. So I think we're going to try a 3-player game sometime soon, and we'll see how it goes. Well, that's it for me today. Please reach out to at Rattlebox Games on Twitter, or Brendan at rattleboxgames.com by email, or any of the other places where I post show notes or converse about games, such as Board Game Geek, where my username is wombat929. I'd love to hear from you, hear what you think about the show, and hear ideas for future topics. Well, that's it for me today. I hope your walk was as pleasant as mine was. Bye-bye. So, so one of the pieces of advice that we heard, oh boy.
Brought to you by Rattlebox Games.